नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादिसुता। हरे कृष्णा। सो we had a break for last 2 days, and I'm sure you have enjoyed your vacation. And today we are going to, rather I'll try to make the class a little more interesting by telling you some story. And I'll get into the story of Brihad Bhagavatamritam, because this is a book by Srila Sanatan Goswami, and in a way this book is the summary of Srimad Bhagavatam, what has been taught in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sanatana Goswami is presenting that through a story. First, this Brihad Bhagavatamrita is presented in two volumes, or rather two parts. The initial part and the later part. Purva Vibhag, or you can say literally it means eastern, and northern part. The initial part actually describes about Narad Muni's search of the highest devotee, the greatest devotee. Now, before getting into that story, I would like to briefly discuss about the condition of India when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to spread Krishna consciousness. It is actually very interesting to note that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to spread Krishna consciousness in India, practically the whole of India was under Muslim domination. It's very interesting that India, which had been the target of many foreign attacks, but no one actually succeeded in entering into India before 1,000 years. Only about 1,000 years ago, the Muslim invaders succeeded in entering into India. And Srila Prabhupada very expertly pointed out that that actually happened because India lost the Vedic culture. Actually, when India was practicing, or the people in India was practicing Vedic culture, India was not only the most prosperous country in the world, but India was the most powerful country in the world. But as the Kali Yuga entered and India started to deviate from Vedic culture, India lost its prowess as well as. And today we can see, since India actually rejected the Vedic culture practically, the India has become, in spite of having everything, India is considered to be one of the poorest countries in the world. Actually, India is not a poor country. Natural resources wise, India is very wealthy, and And human resource-wise, also India is one of the richest country in the world. But today India has become the poorest country. Why? Because India has rejected the Vedic culture today. So this actually indicates that when people practice Vedic culture, they'll become very prosperous and powerful. And when they reject the Vedic culture, they lose all their good qualities. Now, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu obviously descends with a purpose. And the time and place that he selects has also its relevance. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the age of Kali with a specific purpose. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the land of India with a specific purpose. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this particular part of India with a very specific purpose. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu selected a time when this country was completely taken over by a group of people, those who are extremely inimical towards Vedic culture. Actually, the Muslim invaders, when they came to India, they deliberately took it upon, they deliberately started to do things which was completely contradictory to the Vedic culture. To give an example, in Vedic culture, the Kshatriyas keep mustache and they shave their beard. The Muslims started to clip their mustache and keep their beards. In Vedic culture, one keeps sikha at the back of his head. They started to keep a tuft of hair on the front of the head. In Vedic culture, cow is considered to be an asset. And cow is considered to be worshipable as the mother. But the Muslims came and started to kill the cows. It's not that the Muslim culture actually, Muslim religion actually promotes cow killing. To begin with, when Muslim culture actually flourished in the Middle East, there is no cow. And if anybody had a cow, he was considered to be a very rich man. So obviously in that culture, there was no question of killing cows. And I heard that there is a chapter in Quran, in the initial stage of the Quran, there is a chapter called Surah Al-Baqarah, which is a pure glorification of cow. So obviously, the religion that Muhammad propounded did not allow cow killing. But the Muslims, when they invaded India, they started to kill cows, and that became their religion. Killing cows became their religion. Converting the Hindus or the followers of the Vedic culture became a part of their religion. Now, this anti-Vedic invaders took over the entire India, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually descended at a time like that. In India, and at that time, Bengal was ruled by the tyrannical king Hushain Shah. Very, very tyrannical person. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared at that time. It was a time when the Hindus, especially the Brahmins, were tortured to death. The female members of their family were tortured in front of them. In front of the male members, in order to force them to convert. So in such a situation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually descended. And he appeared, he selected a time like that. Why? Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to teach us that this Krishna consciousness movement will flourish, irrespective of any material condition. Even if we are in the worst material condition, we should not become disheartened. If we are facing the greatest opposition, we should not become disheartened. We should have implicit faith in Krishna. We should have implicit faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That if we follow this process, the Krishna consciousness movement will spread. So in order to instill that faith in us, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself appeared at such a difficult time. And after he started his preaching, actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started to spread Krishna consciousness directly after he got initiated by Ishwar Puri in Gaya. And Mahaprabhu stayed in Bengal for a few years after that, and he spread Krishna consciousness very, very effectively. And he converted, he stood up against the Muslim rulers. In this area, the district magistrate was Chand Kazi, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stood up in protest against him when Chand Kazi tried to stop the Sankirtan movement. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started his civil disobedience movement. And Chand Kazi was so scared that he submitted himself to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu converted some very, very powerful people, those who are very degraded, like Jagai and Madhai. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu created an wave, a tidal wave of spiritual uprise at that time. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and left home, and he went to Jagannath Puri. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Nityananda Prabhu to spread Krishna consciousness in Bengal. And he instructed the Goswamis, especially Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, to go to Vrindavan and retrieve the lost places of Krishna's pastimes and write scriptures to establish the eternal religion of a living entity, Sanatan Dharma. To establish the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Goswamis actually wrote different literatures. And of them, six are most prominent. Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and Sri Jiva Goswami. Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami received instructions directly from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu instructed them. They were actually very elevated. They were holding some very responsible position in the Muslim king's court. Sanatan Goswami was the prime minister of the Muslim king, Hussein Shah. And Rupa Goswami was the finance minister. In this way we can see that these two personalities were holding two most important positions. But as soon as they came in contact with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they lost all interest for their respectable ministerial position. And Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami was the first one to leave. And then Sanatana Goswami also quit his job and they went to Vrindavan. And when they went to Vrindavan, they were actually leading a very humble and simple life. They were practically maintaining themselves by begging And those days, Vrindavan, there was nothing. Vrindavan was just some forest. Krishna's, the places of Krishna's pastimes were lost from human eyes. And that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually asked Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami to retrieve those places. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself also rediscovered the Radhakund and Shyamkund. Shyamkund and Radhakund were lost. They were just a paddy field with a little bit of knee-deep water in some part. So Radhakund and Shyamkund were practically lost, and it was filled up with mud. 5,000 years is a long time. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated that these were the two places of Krishna's and Radharani's pastimes. Radhakund, the pond that was very dear to Srimati Radharani. And it is said that Radhakund, the water is not actually water. The water of Radhakund is the pure love of Srimati Radharani. Is the liquid love of Srimati Radharani is Radhakund. And Shyamkund is the place where all the places of pilgrimage has appeared. Now, the Goswamis wrote volumes of literatures. Out of them, the prominent ones are Rupa Goswami wrote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Ujjal Nilamani, Lalita Madhav, Vidagdha Madhav. These are his famous writings. And Sanatan Goswami's important writings are Hari Bhakti Vilas, or well-known writings are Hari Bhakti Vilas, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And today we'll discuss about the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And Jiva Goswami was a prolific writer. He wrote Sat Sandarbha, the six Sandarbhas. And Sandarbhas means philosophical treatise. And then he wrote Gopal Champu. That's a very beautiful writing. Actually, Gopal Champu is describing Krishna's pastimes in a very profound way. So today, we will discuss the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This book is very interesting because just by understanding this writing of Srila Sanatan Goswami, we can get the perfect understanding of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. Srila Sanatan Goswami, in the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is describing Narad Muni's search for a pure devotee. Narad Muni, they were in Prayag, all the saintly personalities. You'll get the copies of today's outline here. So after the class, you all can collect it. So, Narad Muni was in Prayag with other sages, and they all were describing, they all were addressing each other as the greatest devotee, or they're glorifying each other's devotion. So Narad Muni decided to find out who is actually the greatest devotee. So, at that time Narad Muni came across a wealthy Brahmin who very gorgeously and very sincerely was serving the Lord. So Narad Muni was so impressed by seeing the Brahmana, he just went to him and started to glorify him as the greatest devotee of the Lord and the recipient of the greatest mercy of the Lord. So when the Brahmana heard that, Brahmana said, no, actually I am not a great devotee. I am only an ordinary devotee. I couldn't even become a devotee. But a real devotee is such and such king in South India. So you go there and you'll see what a great personality, great devotee he is. So Narad Muni went there and he found that that's true. This king was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Although he was a king, he had so many responsibilities. But still, all his activities are centered around glorifying and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, so the Brahmana actually told him that, you see, I am a Brahmana. So my occupation is to worship the Lord. So if I worship the Lord, there is nothing great about it. Because it's my occupation. But this king, although he's a Kshatriya, see how wonderfully he is serving the Lord. So that was his reason behind identifying that king as the greatest devotee. So Narad Muni then went to the king and he saw that what the Brahmana told him was true. And although he's a very powerful king and who had so many responsibilities and living in such opulence, but still he is not affected by that. His mind was completely focused onto Krishna. So he went and started to glorify the king that he was the greatest devotee of the Lord. But then the king said, look, I am just an ordinary mortal human being. What is my ability to serve Krishna? Actually, it is Indra, the king of heaven, who is the greatest devotee. He is such a great devotee that the Lord himself has appeared as his younger brother, and he receives his worship, his offerings, personally, with his own hands. So Narad Muni then went to the heavenly planet, and he saw Indra, and he started to glorify Indra as the greatest devotee. Then Indra started to lament. He said, see, you are calling me as a great devotee, but you do not know how much trouble I cause for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whenever the demons attack me and I am in distress, I just pray to him and he comes and reinstates me. And then you remember what happened during his Vrindavan pastimes. I challenged his authority and tried to flood Vrindavan. It was such a great offense. Like, I, even to think of it, I feel so embarrassed that I feel like committing suicide. So in this way, Indra started to lament, and he said, then Indra pointed out, actually Brahma is the greatest devotee. And he says, Brahma is not only the engineer of this universe and maintaining the universe, but in one day of Brahma, 14 Indras like me appear and disappear. So, you can, actually, Brahma is the greatest devotee. So Narad Muni went to Brahma and started to glorify Brahma as the greatest devotee. And hearing that, Brahma just covered his ears and started to say, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. He says, Narad, how many times I have to tell you not to embarrass me like this? Because Narad is Brahma's son, and Brahma many times told Narad that he is not the greatest devotee of the Lord. And Brahma also started to lament that how many times he created distress for the Lord. He gave all kinds of benedictions and boons to the demons. And as a result of that, these demons caused so much difficulties, and then the Lord had to come personally to rectify the situation. And then he said, actually, Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee. So Narad Muni then went to Kailash, and there he started to offer, he went there and offered obeisances to Lord Shiva, addressing him as the greatest devotee. Then Lord Shiva just came to Narad, picked him up from the ground and embraced him, and said, Narad, actually I am not a devotee of the Lord. And he started to explain that actually the residents of Vaikuntha are the greatest devotee of the Lord. And because they are the eternal associates of the Lord. And Lord Shiva also started to tell him that you are calling me a great devotee, but consider, I became so puffed up with my elevated position that I think that I am the greatest. And I even fight against the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, siding my devotees, siding my followers. Like Vanasura, when Krishna went to kill Vanasura, I fought against Krishna. And he brought me back to my senses by not only cutting all the hands of Vanasura, but burning my abode, Varanasi. And so I had to run away from there. And in this way, Lord Shiva started to lament, and then he started to glorify the position of the residents of Vaikuntha, the eternal associates of the Lord. And then Parvati started to explain that among all the devotees of Vaikuntha, among all the residents of Vaikuntha, Lakshmi Devi is the greatest devotee. And then when Narada was about to go to Vaikuntha, then Lord Shiva stopped him. He said, but still, even greater devotee is Prahlad. Prahlad, Maharaj, is even greater than the residents of Vrindavan, residents of Vaikuntha. And he resides in Sutala Loka. So Narad Muni went to Prahlad Maharaj. So, Prahlad Maharaj, when Narad Muni started to glorify him as the greatest devotee, then Prahlad Maharaj started to explain, started to tell him in a very humble mood that he is not actually a great devotee. His devotion, it was just like a child's attachment to something. He was just a little child and he kind of developed some attachment to Krishna. And that was about all. Actually, he is not a great devotee. The real devotee is Hanuman. And he started to explain, Hanuman had done so much for the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj, Parvati started to explain, that among all the devotees of Vaikuntha, among all the residents of Vaikuntha, Lakshmi Devi is the greatest devotee. And then when Narada was about to go to Vaikuntha, then Lord Shiva stopped him. He said, but still, even greater devotee is Prahlad. Prahlad, Maharaj, is even greater than the residents of Vrindavan, residents of Vaikuntha. And he resides in Sutala Loka. So Narad Muni went to Prahlad Maharaj. So Prahlad Maharaj, when Narad Muni started to glorify him as the greatest devotee, then Prahlad Maharaj started to explain, started to tell him in a very humble mood that he is not actually a great devotee. His devotion, it was just like a child's attachment to something. He was just a little child and
he kind of developed some attachment to Krishna. And that was about all. Actually, he is not a great devotee. The real devotee is Hanuman. And he started to explain, Hanuman had done so much for the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj started to say that all he did displayed some kind of childish sentiments towards the Lord. But service-wise, he didn't do anything noticeable. He actually, when he was in distress, rather Lord had to come and save him so many times. But Hanuman, see how much he had done for the Lord. So then Narad Muni went to Hanuman, and when he started to explain, to describe Hanuman as the greatest devotee, then Hanuman started to cry. He says, already my heart is afflicted due to the separation from the Lord. And why are you inflicting more pain into that afflicted heart? He said, if I was a devotee of the Lord, then why did the Lord reject me? I am separated from Him. I can't see my Lord anymore. And He has forgotten me. The real devotee are the Pandavas. And see, the Lord is with them. And they are in constant association with the Lord, and then in this way, Hanuman started to glorify the Pandavas. So, then Narad Muni went to Hastinapur and met the Pandavas, and he started to offer them all the words of glorification and worship. And the Pandavas felt very embarrassed. They said, Narad Muni, what happened to you? Why are you doing this to us? And then the Pandavas started to tell Narad Muni that actually the Jadavas are the greatest devotee. They are the eternal associates of the Lord. They are the relatives of the Lord. We actually remember the Lord only when we are in distress. And we just took his help and his assistance. But look at these Jadavas. They are so close to the Lord that they have become, they are the relatives of the Lord. They are born in the same family. They have the constant association of the Lord. Then Narad Muni went to Dwarka. And in Dwarka, he went to the Sudharma assembly. And in Sudharma assembly, he started to glorify the Jadavas. But the Jadavas then explained to him, actually, Uddhav is the greatest devotee. And they explained why Uddhav is the greatest devotee. He said that Uddhav is always with the Lord. And the Lord is so close to Uddhav that he counsels him. He consults with him as if Uddhav is his minister. And he's such a close friend of the Lord that all the important missions, Lord actually sends Uddhava to execute. And in this way they all started to glorify Uddhava as the greatest devotee. So Narad Muni, with the prospect now of meeting Uddhava, became so moved with emotion that he could barely walk. His legs were wobbling. His voice choked, and he was somehow made his way to the inner chamber of Krishna's palace. And when he spoke to Uddhava, when he started to glorify Uddhava, Uddhava said, Narad Muni, one time I also had that misconception that I am the greatest devotee of the Lord. But ever since I went to Vrindavan, that misconception has been eradicated. Actually, if you really want to see the devotees of the Lord, then you should go to Vrindavan and see the residents there, residents of Vrindavan. So their love is unique for the Lord. And at that time, Narad Muni saw that the queens and mother Devaki, they were feeling very, very much in anxiety. They appeared to be in great anxiety, and they were talking to among themselves. And then Narad Muni got to know that they were in such anxiety because Krishna had a dream of the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna had a dream of Vraja the night before, and since then he became so heartbroken that he covered his whole body with the bed sheet, with the chadar, and he was crying. He didn't, although it was quite late in the day, quite late in the morning, he didn't wake up as yet. And so in this way they were talking. Then Mother Rohini said, if Krishna is so much afflicted due to the separation from the residents of Vrindavan, then why doesn't Krishna go to Vrindavan? Then Rukmini Devi, Krishna's queen, she replied, no, actually, Krishna's heart is always in Vrindavan. During the daytime, don't you see that he is always so absent-minded, as if his mind is somewhere else? Although his body is here, but his mind is somewhere else. And at night, Krishna actually goes to Vrindavan in his dream. And he starts to speak about, he starts to call his friends and his girlfriends and the cows and Nanda Maharaj, Mother Jasoda, as if when he falls asleep, he literally goes to Vrindavan. And he, as if he starts to associate with those residents of Vrindavan. And then Balaram said, this is all his pretension. If he was really that much in love with the residents of Vrindavan, then why is he causing so much pain for them? And at that point, when Krishna heard that, Krishna just got up and started to cry. He said, I wouldn't give to go to Vrindavan. And he started to explain why he couldn't go to Vrindavan. And saying that, he embraced Balaram and started to cry, and then both of them fainted, Krishna and Balaram. At that point, Brahma, and when Krishna Balaram fainted, then everybody started to cry loudly. So from Sudharma assembly, from the court, from Krishna's assembly, Ugrasen and all the other members of the assembly, they just, as soon as they heard the cry from inside the palace, they came running and asked what happened. And then they started to wonder what to do now that Krishna fainted. Then Brahma called Garuda and told Garuda to carry Krishna Balaram to New Vrindavan. And an island in the ocean was made into Vrindavan by Vishwakarma. The place looked just like Vrindavan. And Narad Muni also just went there. He was, he saw that Balaram and Krishna were carried, And Balaram came back to his senses, and then Brahma actually suggested that let Krishna be dressed as a cowherd boy. So Krishna was dressed as a cowherd boy, a flute was tucked in, and a flower garland was given. He was wearing a yellow dhoti and peacock feather on his head. And so that place, New Vrindavan, was created by Brahma as if it was exactly like Vrindavan, and the sort of dioramas of all the residents of Vrindavan were there. They were just statues, or you can say deities. And then Balaram woke Krishna up. He said, Krishna, Krishna, wake up, it's getting late. And so Krishna woke up, and Krishna said, oh, it's all, sun is already up. And it's strange, I slept till so long today. And you know, Balaram, I had a strange dream last night. I was having a dream that I went to a place and I became a king there and I got married to 16,000 queens. Or 16,000, I became the king and I got married to 16,000 queens. And then Balaram said, okay, okay, come, let's go. Everyone is waiting for you. And then Krishna saw Mother Jasoda, and Mother Jasoda was just standing there. So Krishna felt that Mother Jasoda was so upset with him that she didn't want to talk to him. So Krishna said, Mother, are you angry with me that I slept till so late today? And then Balaram said, come, let's go. And then when Krishna, in this way, when he came across Radharani, then Krishna started to address her as my dearest. And the way Krishna started to deal with Srimati Radharani, that Narad Muni recognized that this is the personality who is dearest to Krishna. And in this way, through this first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami established that of all the devotees, the residents of Vrindavan are the highest, and of all the residents of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani is the greatest recipient of Krishna's love. And so now you can see how Sanatana Goswami actually presented the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam through this Brihad Bhagavatamrita. In the first part, he established the greatest devotee. It's not a matter of just jumping and claiming that the residents of Vrindavan are the greatest and the Radharani is the greatest devotee. But very systematically, Sanatana Goswami pointed out different degrees or different grades of elevation for devotees. And ultimately, it is Srimati Radharani who is the greatest of all devotees. So, the part two describes about a journey of a cowherd boy to Golok Vrindavan. That we will discuss tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yes, in the lake. Yeah. Krishna felt that if he went back to Vrindavan, then it will be extremely difficult for both himself as well as the residents of Vrindavan. So he, and that's why he preferred not to go to Vrindavan. Well, I think it'll be better tomorrow. I just get it from the book and explain it just the way it has been presented. And the basic thing is, the basic understanding is this, that It will be very extremely difficult for himself to be with them after such a separation. And it will be difficult for the residents of Vrindavan as well. But I'll explain it tomorrow. You see, then Balaram actually pulled him. He said, come, let's go. Everyone is waiting. Because Balaram didn't want to give him a chance to realize that these were just some statues. Right? This is not real Radharani. I mean, of course, Radharani's deity is also Radharani. But that is how it has been presented. And then, Krishna actually started to play his flute. And the whole creation swooned. And at that time, Krishna was thinking that the ocean was Jamuna. And he told Balaram that, hey Balaram, how come there is this big city on the other side of the ocean, seeing Dwarka? He said, huh? When did that happen? I didn't know that. Then Balaram actually told Krishna, Krishna, come back to your senses. Your friends, Pandavas, although you have killed all the demons and Pandavas have been reinstated in their kingdom, but still the enemies are trying to gather their strength together and going to attack the Pandavas. So as soon as Krishna heard that, he just screamed. He said he came back to his identity as Krishna of Dwarka, and so whoever dares to do anything to my devotees, I'll immediately take care. Let's go, and I'll take care of the demons. And so then he realized, I mean, in this way, he came back to his Dwarka consciousness. And one important point also about this question, why Krishna couldn't go back to Vrindavan. The one point actually is, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. The Brajendranandan Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. He's always in Vrindavan. It is only by Krishna's yogamaya that they feel that Krishna left. And as a result of that, when they see Krishna in front of them, they feel as if they're dreaming. So it's not that they don't see Krishna, the Krishna comes to them. But when Krishna comes to them, they deal with Krishna as if it's real. But then they feel that they were actually dreaming. It was not Krishna. So that is how in Vrindavan Krishna actually creates a situation where through this separation, love becomes intensified. Because through Krishna's pastimes, it becomes quite clear to his devotees that the intensity of feeling in separation is deeper than union. The love becomes even more intensified in separation. Therefore, Krishna creates a situation like that in Vrindavan, whereby they feel that Krishna has left. And that is the reason why they feel that they are married to somebody else. They are not actually married to anybody else, but that kind of an illusory concept that is created to intensify their love for Krishna. Anyway, these aspects we'll discuss tomorrow. Falgun?
It's about the same point of the feeling like it's like a dream. Is that only when in this case Krishna is in Dwarka and he left Vrindavan? It's only in this case or the same aspect is also present in Goloka in the spiritual world.
In the spiritual world also that feeling is there, that Krishna went away and there is separation. And you see, the ultimate consideration is that Jiva Goswami is saying that Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, never leaves Vrindavan. He doesn't step out of Vrindavan at all. And the Krishna of Dwarka is another Krishna. That's Vasudev Krishna. It's an expansion of Krishna, not the original Krishna. And this has been established through the fact that, you see, when Akrura came to take Krishna, Krishna and Balaram went to Jamuna and took bath. Right? And there, Akrura actually saw the four-armed form of Krishna. So at that point, that Vasudev Krishna came and got into the chariot, and Vrajendranandan Krishna walked back to Vrindavan. So he didn't really leave Vrindavan. Yes, Munjari. Yeah. You see, on Krishna's part, Krishna always want to give protection to his devotees. But Krishna's devotees do not want to give any trouble to Krishna. They feel that we are the servants and Krishna should be served. We should serve him. Not that Krishna should come and serve us. That is the feeling of a devotee. And that is the loving reciprocation. In this intense love, Krishna, not only that the devotees love Krishna and serve Krishna, Krishna also wants to reciprocate by serving the devotees. But when Krishna does that, then the devotees become very, very embarrassed and they feel very, very unhappy that Krishna has been caused to, they have caused Krishna to do something for them. Krishna is arranging everything, but that is the Vaikuntha understanding, not Vrindavan understanding. In Vrindavan understanding, they don't feel that Krishna is arranging everything. They feel that they are arranging everything. Mother Yashoda feels unless she feeds Krishna, Krishna will die. So that is the difference between Vaikuntha understanding and Vrindavan understanding. In Vrindavan, the devotees do not really think that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is arranging everything for everyone. They're feeling bad for what? Yes, if. Yeah, I mean generally in Vrindavan mood, they feel that way. The devotees, generally, in general devotees do feel that way. Although Krishna, they know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still, they want to serve Krishna instead of accepting service from Krishna. That is their general mood. Yes, Krishna Prem Prabhu.
Can we understand, I was asking that, I don't know, because my understanding is not very clear yet. I don't know if I will ever be able to understand it. The pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, we may say that they start when Krishna was appeared in Vrindavan. And then the whole scene was set up and all the interaction with how does it work? I mean, because from the time that Krishna went away from Vrindavan, went to Dwarka, he never went back to Vrindavan.
That is the general understanding, apparent understanding. But actually, as I mentioned, like according to Jiva Goswami, Krishna never left Vrindavan.
So what happened? That means that, how does it go? I don't understand it. So it means that from the time Krishna went to Dwarka, there is a reset and everything starts all over again from the beginning.
Now, okay, let us take it from this point. Akrura came to Krishna way, right? But actually, at the border of Vrindavan and Mathura, Krishna went to take bath in the river. At that point, the Krishna from the Vasudev Krishna, the Krishna the son of Vasudev, came and got into the chariot. And Krishna the son of Nanda Maharaj, he went back to Vrindavan. And from that point onwards, the residents of Vrindavan had a feeling that Krishna has left. But from time to time, Krishna would actually come and deal with them. Right? And when Krishna would deal with them, they would feel that it was a dream. It was not really real. That part, it is difficult because, it is difficult to, there is some description, like for example in Lalita Madhav, there is a description, say for example, one day, Radharani felt, she was feeling great separation from Krishna. And she was crying and crying. So Vishakha painted a picture of Krishna and held it in front of Radharani. So when Radharani saw that picture, then she felt that the personality from the picture actually came out and tried to embrace her. And when he was trying to embrace her, she felt great she felt very shy. And at that point, that dream broke. That personality disappeared. Right? Okay, then, in this intense separation, she was feeling that it's pointless for her to be alive. She decided that she is just going to give up her life. So she just sat there, with a desire to give up her life. So at that point, Vishakha told her, Radha, please open your eyes and see who is there. And when she opened her eyes, she saw that Krishna was standing in front of her. But when she saw Krishna in that way, she thought that she was dreaming. So in this way, you see, the exchanges, I mean, they can't figure out, you know, when they're seeing real Krishna or when they're, you know, dreaming about Krishna or creating a mental image of Krishna. And so in this way, the point is that they're always absorbed. They're always absorbed in thinking in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, they're actually never separated from Krishna. Yet, this feeling of separation intensifies their love for Krishna. So, anyway, ultimately I would say that it's something that I cannot really explain because I do not understand. But, you know, like, sort of, you know, like, this is about all that, you know, like I can grasp of this description. So it's already 5:05. We are well, way beyond our time. So
I have two questions that you all have, Falgun and, what's your name? I forgot. Okay. So three questions. You can write down, we can answer them tomorrow. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.